let me ramble down the line. That lonesome train, I love to hear the whistle blow. She's taking the sun and leaving the rain and making me want to go.
This is Dave Monk, Ray Monk, WFT Champagne 90.1 on your FM dial. Dave and the board. Well, Bill and the board at the moment. So I have a lot of things to say today. I've gotten asked several times for a summary of what we do. If you're going to go to YouTube to find our program, then it can be frustrating if you can't find a summary of what we do. And so I've got a summary that includes Bob Drew's passing, Salvage Pointers, Roya Building in Paxton, Prairie Blog, Sierra Club, Organic Farming, Pollinator Farming, Fire Door, Car Repair. And so it's a mixed bag. It's on. It's going. So, first of all, Bob Drew. Bob Drew was with SWEF for about 5 years. He had a varying background. He was involved in teaching at the Urbana High School. And a community leader, lived to St. Joe. He passed just recently. While I was at WEFT, he would do blues. He went to have a debate with Dave from Peoria about how far the genre of prairie moved, but that's part of being a shifter at community. He was in a wheelchair because he had polio, and that put him in a wheelchair. To some extent, he could move with crutches, but not very well. It was interesting. We went to a prairie conference once, and I was reporting that on the left, and Bob explained that the place we stopped, which was a small farming community on the way back from the prairie conference in Nebraska, was a place where he stopped and helped with farming before he had polio. As a teenager, he'd gone west on a wild trip, and when they ran out of money, they worked at the local communities, shifting hay and things like that. Bob was a factotum around WEFT. The handle on the door that we come in with was put there by Bob because he couldn't lift up high enough. And I remember supplying the screwdriver doing that. But Charlene would bring Bob, and so my sympathies go out to Charlene. She not only was his love, but she also helped him quite a lot. And so when he got a new vehicle, I bought the old vehicle, and so my Chrysler is a Bob Drew one-owner car, and been very helpful for us. Bob would do things like he must have observed that I didn't have very good shoes, so he took me to Sears and bought me a pair of boots. Yeah, that sort of thing he'd do with others too. And he was outspoken. He was at our opening of the Kickapoo Trail and knew that I'm very anxious to get some of the prairie there preserved and have the trail a little narrower. And he was telling me a little of the politics of St. Joe in true Bob Drew fashion. David might even have some comments on Bob Drew.
Yeah. He was irascible, which is not at all a bad thing. I mean, it just means whatever he thought, you heard about it. And again, that's kind of that's what WEFT is. I mean, you've got 80 people who think that they belong on the radio. They obviously are not shy in retiring, so you're going to hear what they think. And some of us can actually modify our opinions, and he was one of them. He would tell you what you needed to know, but if you could convince him your perspective, maybe you'd both compromise. Maybe you'd actually realize, oh, yeah, his way is better, and you'd do it his way. But
yes.
Sometimes my way was better.
Leaders tend to put forth an idea when there may not be other ideas, and then you are open to question them. And so, yes, that happens at WEFT. So we're sad to lose Bob, and we sympathies go to Charlene and family. But okay, so next on my list is salvage. I just went round the corner, and there was a box.
For those of you listening at home, and you have no choice but to listen at home at this point, he's picking up a box of boxes.
Yes. If you stuff a box in a dumpster like this, unbroken, but some broken, but not even flattened, that is a waste of space. It is done by people who have the intelligence to do better. And it means that cardboard bin gets full and overflowing. And if you're in some salvage domains, you will be charged extra for having something over the limits of the size of the bin. It happens all around us, and I have drawings that we will probably put up. The first one is of the dumpster with flattened, broken and flattened cardboard. And you can fit a lot of cardboard in a dumpster, not if you put a box. So a box of any sort, unflattened, is a no-no. It saves you costs. You can come out of your business and you can put the cardboard in there. And it's not your cost, it's somebody else's cost. So we need to reform that. And I keep saying this, so this is nothing that you haven't heard before. Then if you want to put a pile of small items in the dumpster, then it takes out a lot of space. If you just stand at the dumpster and tent the material in there, which often happens, one big box, flattened, but put in tent style, can waste a lot of space. If you add a few boxes, then you're also there. I have in my hand a mat knife. It has a razor sharp blade on the end of it, and it's good for cutting cardboard. Every institution should have a mat knife. And if it's a public institution, it should have an architect that designs the waste so that you can have waste and salvage. Often that doesn't happen. You want a small bar so people can move behind it, and you don't do that. So all the cans go into the garbage. And right this minute, someone is salvaging from a bin nearby, and I've taken a photograph of what he did from another bin, and it must have been about 200 aluminum cans. They're all going to the landfill, or that's where they were going. You also have to have planners who make sure that we don't NIMBY facilities out of town. NIMBY is not in my backyard. That means that if you have a dump yard, doesn't look good. But if you're going to send the NIMBY types out on Cunningham Avenue, miles away, then people who salvage from dumpsters can't do it. And a bicycle is essential to take those cans. We must have mountains of cans in the landfill, all aluminum. One of these days, someone will dig the landfill and mine it for aluminum. But they shouldn't go there in the first place. So architects, planners, contractors should make space for cans to be separated, glass to be separated. We're running out of sand, and glass is sand. It comes from sand. So a mountain of glass can also be mined in the future when we run out of good quality sand. So the next thing is that mat knife. Get back to the mat knife. You have a box like this which takes drinks and provides a coffee or other drinks, and usually has a plastic bag inside. You take the plastic bag out, thank you. It doesn't go to the landfill. And you then apply your mat knife to this box so it doesn't destroy the room that you have in the dumpster. So that's my rave, but it's constant. They can't believe how many times people put a full box into the dumpster.
Okay. If I may jump in here for a second, we recycled at our house this last week, and we went up to a place on in Urbana. I'll go ahead and mention by name. It's called Max, and you can take your aluminum up there, and you can get a few cents per pound for your stuff. So we got on the order of, ooh, 20 whole dollars for returning all of our aluminum that has been collecting. We tried to estimate. We'd been filling a van with aluminum cans, bags of them, for over a year, and we got $20 for all of our stuff. We also bought lots and lots of cardboard. Now, you can't get money for cardboard, but they do take it. So if you flatten all your cardboard and put it into bags and then take it up along with your aluminum, Max will take it. They'll even point you to the building to stick it all in. So, yes, you can actually at least recycle cardboard and aluminum. Unfortunately, there is no place that I know of that you can put bottles anymore. If you put it out with your recycling, if you've got recycling where you live with your garbage pickup, my understanding is it pretty much ends up in the landfill anyway, because glass is not worth anything these days. So no one will even try to melt
heavy.
It down.
You've
got
to take glass to treat it to be recycled.
Yes, but there are at least a couple of places, including the one that we go to, where you can actually get paid for your aluminum and give them your cardboard.
Very good. So please behave yourself around dumpsters, and appreciate those people who are dumpster diving, because it's very helpful that those cans don't go to the landfill. So I have my notes here, and the next one is Paxton. At Paxton, the high school there is in danger. It's a Joseph Royer High School, so it has very fancy brickwork, and it has had an addition to it. but it is the sort of building that is really worth saving. The school board is in charge. The school board is not into saving buildings. That's not their mission. And so the board is willing to allow auction of the insert, and then they will pay money to take the asbestos out of it. And it'll cost over $1 million. The point is that if you have a building and you have asbestos on pipelines that are never disturbed and not in contact with the public, you don't really have to remove that asbestos. You can paint it over, and so you don't have that cost. But if you demolish, you have asbestos, and the government does not want you putting that asbestos just anywhere. So I went to the school board. I had communicated with a couple of people who are Paxton natives that would like to preserve this building, and they've been moving through various machinations to see what they could do. There's a couple of women that have a strong background in this Scandinavian, probably mostly Norwegian community, and this school is surrounded by reasonably fancy houses, so you know that when the school is taken down, it's going to become a lawn, and it's not going to become a factory. It's probably going to sit as a lawn for a long time. You also have to know that up the road there's a Westlawn school, which is much smaller, but and not named, not designed by a named architect. So, and it has looked a little on the sad side, but the foundation has bought it and is at least going to rehab the facade and find a functional reuse for it. But the fact that that building is there and hasn't been used for a while is a drawback for the other more sophisticated preservation. I'd been up to Paxton several times. We have a corridor there from Rantoul to Paxton and possibly on to Kankakee, which it can do a lot to introduce people to their natural and cultural environment. The roadsides are loaded with prairies. The soils are there, the microorganism there, the genetics is there. If we want gene pool for the future, it's there. And so it ties in a little to this sort of high school. If you were going to convince the Paxton community to reserve this high school, you have to have an idea of how it will be used. You can get that from the federal government a lot, or not necessarily the federal government, but people across the country who have been restoring gray fields rather successfully. You have to know your business. You have to know that you can put some business on the first floor. You can put, in this case, they're thinking perhaps the classrooms could become motel rooms. Then you would have to meet all the health regulations that are. You could have a gymnasium with climbing facilities in it. You could perhaps have an annex for natural history and cultural history. You could have a museum which give an idea of a soil transect or other facilities. You could have artifacts that come from historic buildings. And you could just tell stories about the past and the settlement of this area, first by rivers and then by rail and by ethnic groups. So you have Norwegians here, but you might have Irish in another place or Germanic people in another place. And how do they sort out and how do you interact with each other? we also have a trail, and trails nationally have been bringing communities together and introducing them to each other. And there's economics in this. People put in restaurants, people put in bike shops, and gradually the communities through which the trails move begin to not only beautify but be interesting. We have ecotourism and eco-cultural tourism that brings people to other places. They have enough education now and enough free time to want to find out what your community was like, and they would generously want you to find out what their community is like. So we have like 20,000 miles of these sorts of trails across the country. East Central Illinois has very few of these because every inch of the glaciated soil in East Central Illinois is in farming or other uses. The only little pieces of prairie we have are on railroad beds. And the state has managed to preserve less than 0.01% of the original prairie that we had, the prairie that started off 10,000 years ago and gradually created a dynamic and matured the glacial till soils and gave us our farmland. So our heritage is nearly gone. We may want to go off and save the elephants, but our own ecosystem is in danger. And especially it's in danger for the 100 broadleaf species and the six or so grasses. This is our biochemical library. This is what we don't know about, but which we might not want to know about if we have a disease which we don't know about now. So we have a resource. A lot of it is in the soil. Most of the soils outside of the railroad beds have been chemicalized for fertilizer and for herbicide and insecticide and what have you. So we have a wide corridor, which we've spoken about before. It's wide because of an interurban and an old road and a gravel pit and a modern dual highway, which the dual second leg didn't get built because 57 went in and went around and didn't necessitate it anymore. So we have land mainly owned by the Department of Transportation. The Department of Transportation is very interested in, and the world in general is interested in, not necessarily mowing all the native plants that are along the railroad bed and along the roadside. So they have a committee headed by Stephanie Dobbs that brings together township supervisors and people who have quality roadside prairies that should be available for people, for ambiance, for genetics, for just plain saving some of your heritage and explaining it. That means you have to explain it. That means in simplicity you have little, they're called kiosks, where you can see a map or two and get an idea of what you're driving through. Looks like weeds, but it's not. In the more sophisticated sense, you would have to person such an exhibit. So if you did have a museum at the Royer building, you would have to figure on future expenditure of persons to person that museum. People are getting older, but they're living longer. They're interested in doing things. Young people are concerned that they're not going to have the resources that their older relatives had. And there are people out there that are willing to do and work to make this sort of thing possible. But you have to get your ideas together. You have to figure out whether you're going to have a non-profit agency. If people are going to give you $5 to put a picture in the parade of this building, then somebody has to have an agency or organization in the first place. Then perhaps if it's a little more sophisticated, you get non-profit organization. Then if you're a little bit more sophisticated than that, you get a 501c3 so that people get a tax break on the $2 that they give. It might be more than that. You would hope that it might be more than that. You also have to make sure that you have people who support, and you have to also know that there are people who oppose. And often it's easier to oppose than it is to support. To support, you have to have new ideas that mightn't gel in your head very quickly. So you have to be also looking at the middle group that doesn't know about this project, this event, this building, this prairie, this place of interest, and you have to educate. So you have to be on your website, you have to be on Facebook, and David knows about this because we just last week did our program. It took us 3 hours to put pictures into that program. So that's a massive amount of time. But we also have to have enough background history and background knowledge to be able to put that sort of information together without making boo-boos. So what we do at this stage is fairly rough and tough, but it's really worthwhile. This week I went to the Urbana Public Television, and we had pictures that we can't put into our overall program, but we can put it into a blog. You can't put 70 pictures into a radio program that becomes a video program that goes up on YouTube. There's just a few to keep pictures. But if you're wanting to explain what a prairie is and how it's growing in the spring and how it transfers into the summer and the active growing time for a prairie and then into the fall, you're going to have a lot of pictures. We used to have a pocket prairie across the road, but it has become a beer garden, and it's a tremendously successful beer garden. There are people there enjoying, so we don't deny that. We've taken the prairie to the Second Street dig, but it's not the same, and we need to take people to places like Rantoul to find a reasonable facsimile of that pocket prairie to show them what a prairie is. So that's 20 miles. You can't do that. So the next best is to get a blog, and so we can send you a blog, or you can go to the YouTube and find a blog under the name of the Prairie Monk, and see what a prairie is like. It's not ideal, but it at least gives you an idea of what we're talking about. And give it 100 years or 200 years, you'll find that prairie is very interesting, and it will be very facsimile of the remnant prairie that's on the railroad and the interurban and the old road nearby. And then you have the recreators, and the recreators are there. They want to bicycle. They want to bicycle across the country. We have friends and relatives that have taken 45 days to bicycle across the country. But there we have others who don't do that quite that way. They stop off in little communities like Paxton and find out what they do and why and who they are and then share. We have a cemetery. The cemetery provides us with weeds. There's a teasel that comes out of the cemetery. It's a very popular dried arrangement and wreaths, but it's tall, 8 foot tall, and it can take over your prairie. And so we spent years, perhaps at least 7 years, just getting rid of teasel and making sure that our prairie gets to express itself. There's junk. The junk has accumulated. And the Department of Transportation, in its wisdom, has blocked the road off, and they've provided us with a heavy-duty gate that says to a tandem truck that's dumping, dump, you don't go here. Thank you. Go somewhere else and dump your contractual materials. So we are hoping that we'll have a fence. At the moment, we have a toy fence, which is just a string that suggests us to visitors that there are people that own this weed-looking territory. And it's growing. Cedar trees, and cedar trees don't belong, and if we let the cedar trees go, they will have seeds that the birds will kindly move around everywhere. So cedars are something that we revile and get rid of. We also get rid of autumn olives that also have seeds. Were brought in because they had seeds. And the birds have been very helpful in moving them around the region. So it's the region's worst weed tree. We have a transect that goes from wet, like Flatville, and the Deutschlanders and Frieslanders that knew how to drain it. But then it goes up the hill to mesic and to dry stuff. And we have Lurs, which was blown across the moraines left by the glaciers. That Lurs is finely ground glacial till, and it's very fertile, and it gives character to the soils. We need to know the soils. We need to know which the Drummonds and the Flatingers are wet and organic, and the ones that are xeric and on top of the hill and are dry. We need to know how the plants sort themselves out. We also need to know about the cultures. So if you're in the Kankakee area, you have Cajun people, and people don't realize that Cajuns didn't only go to New Orleans. They escaped from French and English battles in Canada, and some of them came to this general region. So the culture is part of the thing. So if we go to the little Papillon church over on Route 9, there's a little prairie near the church, and there's a church cemetery, and the progenitors of some of the Norwegian people are there, and you can go to the cemeteries for history. At other places, you're near the Iroquois River, so you have a mafioso era when contraband could cut them up the river. You had early settlers that came up the river. You had Augie Keitzman, who was one of the early people who did welding. And he went to Texas. The government begged him to go to Texas so they could establish some of the first airports in World War I for biplanes. And the biplanes had some problems because when they went to enter service and they did a dive and had to get power out of the dive, they weren't being very successful. Mm-hmm. So they thought that Augie Keitzman was responsible until they found out that someone was drilling a hole in the blocks, mm-hmm. so that the planes didn't have power. So these stories it's the sort of thing you should know about as you come. Buckley has a church that has a steeple that you can see for miles, mm-hmm. It has ornamentation on. Loder has a prairie. The railroad line alongside Loder has a prairie. There are rolling hills at Paxton. There are rolling hills at Rantoul on the Bloomington Range. And these encourage more of the livestock agriculture because they're not easy to plow and harvest for corn and soybeans. But you also have glacial till facing north and south, or facing south, really. And they warm up sooner, so you can have earlier crops. And you can have, underneath all that, there is drainage, palmate drainage coming off the moraine. That is what was channelized and straightened so that water could get off of Champaign County and other counties so that you could do agriculture. So there were the Deutschlanders and the Frieslanders at Flatville gaining very valuable prairie lands. So we have to think about the water, but we also have to think about the aquifers that are underneath. These glaciers covered up the water-worn landscape that was underneath. So in places there are gravel beds that are aquifers, and this is not exactly a river, but it sort of moves to Beardstown and the Illinois River. But the input is slight, but the output can be very great. And if you're doing irrigation, that output can take very good water and convert it with the addition of nitrogen and phosphorus and herbicides and whatnot into a scungy water that has to go somewhere. So we think about all these things, and they all relate to the sort of museum that we're thinking about. And if you go to Iowa, you can find the sort of museum with cross-sections of a prairie landscape, so you can see the catena of soil, so that you can see where the creatures are. And you have places where there's a library and where people can tell stories. The older people can tell you that, oh, yes, in that little cemetery preserve, there are families that have been there for years. How did they come? Did they come in a covered wagon? What's the story? We might know and get it straight because this comes by word of mouth, but it's intriguing to young people and to older people alike. Where is the music? What can we do? So it's all a dream, but it's a rather important dream, because if you take that building out, you lose a key part of the overall function. So if you need, you can call me and I'll send you a blog of some of our biological details, but we also have cultural details too. So I'm looking at what the Sierra Club met this week. They have once a month they meet at various different places. And we were outside in the streetscape, outside the tavern on the corner of First and Neil. And I suspect there might have been about 15 people. And Sierra Club is a little bit or more on the political side than some associations like the Audubon Society or Isaac Walton. They meet and they go to Springfield to talk about water and talk about issues that are at the national and the state level. There I met up with Kevin Green and his wife, Sue, and Kevin is on the Danville Vermilion County Board, and he's a nabob in doing interesting things with the community. So he owns farmland there, but he's been involved with the Kickapoo Trail and all sorts of other issues. He and Sue were going to go to the Art Theater to see a film that deals with organic farming. And the Art Theater in itself is interesting because it's now a community nonprofit agency and run independently. And that's one of these achievements that you like to see. In the process, we chatted, and you get to know each other. And the unfortunate part of some of our activities is there are a lot of people who are individual, and they don't necessarily sit down as a crowd. They often have projects and to which they both contribute, or they all contribute to it. But it's not an organized thing. It comes together, however. So you see Bob Drew, you see other people doing interesting things. I was impressed by the film. The film was kind of on the commercial side. This group got together in a dry land and used irrigation water to work on the desert. And they came to a very dry area and converted it. They proselytized the community for funds to do this sort of thing. And that was successful to the point that they could have biodiversity. They could buy in trees, fruit trees that were already established, and do contour work that was pretty impressive. The biodiversity came along, whether it was hogs or coyotes or gophers or every move had a insect or a wog that would invade. So what do you do about that? How do you maintain your biodiversity? Do you shoot the coyote, or do you allow the gophers to grow so the coyote would have some other form of survival? So I was impressed by the film, but it's not something we could do easily. It's one that would require a lot of money. It reminded me of Australia, where the Chaffee brothers were in doing something similar in California, and they were invited to come to Australia to look at the possibility of taking water that came off the mountains and ran into the Bight of Australia and irrigate. And they created a national irrigation system which survives to this day. It even has gotten to the point where it's a little bit like the Colorado. People take out more water than there's available, so that the people at the mouth of the river end up with a dribble, and it's often very salty. So it's the same with the Colorado, it's the same with the Murrumbidgee, Murrumbidgee Lachlan complex in Australia. So that's what I was seeing in the films. Some you would see the vegetation created absorption of water rather than the runoff of water. They were near to fires, but it didn't get burned the same way as you would have if you had all dry material that would accumulate for years and years. I talked to Kevin, and he has been working with the pollinator people. And we had a program on a few weeks ago that dealt with the Pheasants Forever and putting in biodiverse plots of seed that provide for pollination. And Kevin's has something like 250 acres in pollinator planting, and that's impressive. And give it a first year, second year, third year, fourth year, this will improve. And it'll provide a home for insects, butterflies, beetles, small mammals, herpetology people with small snakes and
turtles
and the like. And bacteria, you can't imagine what goes on in one spoonful of soil that is native. So I really encourage that sort of thing. I think the program has come to its close. I think they've used the money that was available for pollination, but still, there will be a lot of local people who will still do corner plots of pollination. And we're looking especially at bees. The Italian bees that we used are not native. The earthworms we use are not native. So we have to balance between the native and the cultivated ones. And in our prairie at Rantoul, the Pope Prairie, we don't really encourage Italian bees, because we were hoping to encourage bumblebees, which are native, and they're not alone. There are many of them, but quite a few of them are becoming extinct because they don't have habitat. Corn and soybeans does not provide a habitat for many insects. So very rapidly we're losing the creatures that we need. I want to say something about, let me see what we've got.
15 minutes.
Yes, we're talking about people being involved in the little CRX, which many of you know. It's a little red CRX Honda donated to us years ago by Tom Rudnick. And it takes me to meetings regularly for a very low amount of gas. And so I took off on, I think it was Thursday night, to go to the school board meeting at Paxton. It was raining. The semi-trailers were going past me at 70 miles an hour, and I was probably doing 60, but it was wet, and I found my way there. And I did speak to the board about the possibility of a corridor that was part cultural, part natural, between Kankakee and Rantoul, specifically between Paxton and Rantoul, because that's one has a very wide territory. The piece between Paxton and Kankakee is less wide. It doesn't have an interurban on it, and so it's harder to deal with. And we would like to take ecotourists and cultural tourists off at Kankakee and come down through to Paxton, and bless me, this school is about one block away from 45, and visitors could be invited in. They could stay in an unusual type motel. They could enjoy some simple museum facilities and perhaps enjoy a dance or a historic story, and then move on down to the Bloomington Moraine and the back side of the Bloomington Moraine past Ludlow, which was a terminus for the Illinois Central Railroad at one stage. And it has grain elevators there that say something about the economics of the agricultural community, the rural community. And then you get to Rantoul, there's an Air Force base, which has changed the nature of Rantoul. This is retired now, but in its day, it was an innovation, and it's restoring itself. Unfortunately, it lost a historic air museum. It's just one of those indications that if we try to preserve the Royal High School, how do we get the spondulics to preserve it? The Air Force base has become a commercial base, but it has its own history, and the possibility of reutilizing the air traffic and teaching. And then if you wanted to come to Urbana, you can get off the road at Rantoul and get back on 57 and go mind your other ecosystem interests. You might go to Kinmundi in the south, where there's a wonderful railroad right-of-way prairie alongside the road, with the road. So you might be able to get on and off. There's one organization down there that was wondering what to do with their community, and they just took a tomato sauce bottle and made one that was about 20 feet high. And tourists visit. It's amazing. If you do interesting things, if you have a shoe industry, you put a huge shoe out there, and people are curious what the shoe is about. So if at Kinmundi there's good prairie, then you know about it. It's near Salem. So you find the interesting artifacts that you could go and visit. But it costs. It has to be arranged between retirees that are living to a great old age, and they have grandchildren that won't have the facilities that they had, and they want to see that the grandchildren have some facilities like the Royer High School building. How do we do it? It's we've got to think about a parade. And so Bill Saylor is putting together a parade vehicle. We're doing the same sort of thing. But yesterday when I came, I went to go to the farmer's market, and my little CRX didn't start. Oh. Well, it started, but it wouldn't move forward or back. So I call up Bill Oldenwater, who's another of these people who belong to teams of people who know each other and care about each other and do things. And he came with a jack, and we jacked up the car, and yes, it was the rear wheels, the shoes on the brakes had not worn out, but they'd come adrift, and I couldn't move. And so there was Bill, probably took about 3 hours on Market Street, about 150 yards from WEFT itself, and he put, we got brake shoes from parts suppliers and put that back together, and so I have my CRX back, and I can go to meetings. I missed the farm market. Might have been a sad day for farm markets because it was raining in the morning. And so
8 minutes.
Okay. Let me see what I've got. Oh, yes. We have a request from the city to put in a fire door between the first floor and the second floor of our building next door. And there, once again, we had people who are helpful. Packer provided a door. Al Fredrickson, Dave Spees, and Rich Cahill.
And PACA stands for what? PACA means?
PACA is a Preservation and Conservation Association. And it gathers up old buildings and sometimes save them. In the Royer case, on Green Street, there's a Royer building that they saved. They didn't salvage from it. They have the salvage opportunities to salvage from the Royer building in Paxton. But if the truth be known, PACA will probably be encouraging the preservation of that building if it can sensibly happen. But right now, the PACA organization, all the volunteers that are involved, are out there at Monticello. There's a big old school. And last Saturday, it was available for people to reminisce. Half of Monticello has been to this school. And it has to be taken down to provide for a bigger and better and more modern school. So PACA is now salvaging from that school. There will be doors and windows and baseboards and a whole lot of materials that will go to PACA on Washington Street, or they also have a warehouse for PACA West where you can go and buy materials for your doing up your older house. So we're very supportive of PACA if we have the opportunity to donate materials. We do so there. We also have people at places like the Habitat people on the university, and I've been taking them styrofoam boxes that could be summer coolers. And I keep asking, do you really want these? Because we can have them recycled. It was a Solo Cup, it's now a different name. They take styrofoam and break it into small pieces and compact them so that it gets to be possible to salvage that plastic material. So all in all, you try and get various people together to do what we do.
5 minutes.
5 minutes. Oh. So we did get our door up. It works very well. It fits well. I'm looking at my notes to see if I've... Oh yes. Market Street has been a Friday night venue for music. And it's closed off at either end, between Taylor Street and University Avenue. And yesterday, or Friday, it rained. And what do you do? Electronic equipment does not do very well in the rain. So there was some conflagration about what should happen, and the poor facility, which has gone in and occupied a building that's been empty for a long, long time, and they fit the bands into the building, that was rather successful. I was not there very much because I was trying to write a letter to the newspaper in Paxton, and I didn't exactly know exactly what I wanted to write. So I was using that time to politic in a simple way, and that happens often. We try to do things when we can and how we can. But when it's in the street, I enjoy the camaraderie. There's some debate about how you can involve alcohol. And if you are in Paris and you're on the street, then you have the opportunity to sensibly participate in food and alcohol. And here, we've widened the straight sidewalks so that you can do that sort of thing, but usually alcohol is not allowed. So if you're going to Parisianize the streets, then you may have to do something to allow alcohol. It may be that you oscillate into the Prairie Garden or the Beer Garden and enjoy. They have games there, they have seats there. It's been quite outrageous. I've been amazed at the amount of activity. But last week, the city decided that alcohol was still a problem. So the alcohol people had to stay behind the fence. Actually, this is a problem for the mayor, and the mayor is usually the alcohol controlling person. And so how do we have sensible interaction on the street? How do we have little kids that dance to the music and run around and fall over? And how do we have parents? And how do we have grandparents who actually play in the band? Or how do we have all our cell phones that people communicate with each other and take photographs? And how do we have Kelly, who is from 40 North and organizes this stuff? I find it rather interesting and exciting, and it's right outside Weft. Weft has to turn off his outside microphones, and not speakers. All in all, I find this tremendous, and I encourage. It's a little different from what you get in Urbana, which is now looking at a new purchaser of the Dumas Lodge Hotel. We hope that in the future it will survive. It's had its problems, and there's an idea store there that's doing very well, and yes, keep going. This is Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WAFC Champaign 90.1 on your FM dial.
And Dave on the board. As always, the views and opinions expressed are solely those of the speakers and no one else. And I'm going to put in a kind of self-serving comment here, talking about pollinators. This coming week, Tuesday through Friday, at the Orpheum Children's Science Museum. If you come on in, bring the kids. You do have to have kids to come into the Children's Museum. It's going to be Pollinator Week. From 2 to 4 in the afternoon, we have some great exhibits for the kids to show them things about pollinators.